First, my name is Wade Brown. I had the honor of overseeing the Rocky Mountain region of Pastor Serve. And what a beautiful region that is, right? So welcome to the Rocky Mountain for those of you who are obviously getting out of town. And some of you are still getting settled. That's cool. But I wanted to thank you. We were reflecting some last night on our engagement with your tribe, if I can call you a tribe. You're a tribe called the EPC. You're a unique tribe, if you haven't discovered that yet. And we love your tribe. So we have been journeying with you. This is our ninth year of journeying with you at these general assemblies. So we exhibit, we do things like this. We provide coaching and care sessions, complimentary, follow-up, just want to stay in touch with you, learn more about your life, ministry, and story, and all that. But we exist to strengthen the church by serving pastors and ministry leaders. We serve them through coaching, consulting, and crisis care work. And so thank you for allowing us to come in. As some of you are like, we didn't have a choice of that. Well, we're here together. I think we can work, make it work for the next 60 minutes or so. But I am delighted because we've got two of our best who are going to be facilitating and guiding this time today. Dave Meserve, who lives here in the Denver area. He's part of the Rocky Mountain team. He's one of our coach extraordinaires. And then Jeannie Martin over here to my left. She is the National Director for Women in Ministry, also another coach extraordinaire in the Rocky Mountain region. So thank you for engaging in this time. And I think they'll be back up front here in just a moment to guide you further in this experience. So thanks for being here.
Sorry, Wade, we were...
And you know what? I'm going to embarrass one more person in the room. Brian Martin is our director, soon to be chief of operations. And so he's right here. And many of you know, you may know Brian because he's been part of your tribe for, I don't know, how many years, Brian?
2008.
There you go. So we got another team member in the room as well.
So while you, so you might need to rearrange to sit with someone you don't know, if you don't mind. And ask the question, answer the question, and then we will debrief that. And go team.
Okay, so this is turned off.
This is on, and I started it recording.
All right, I think we're recording. Not that you need to know that, but there you have it. Again, I'm Dave, Wade, and Jeannie. We're with Pastor Serve and Brian. We're all with Pastor Serve. Brian and I actually EPC ordained. I actually worked here, Cherry Hills. This was my first call. I had 15 years here, mostly a singles pastor. I'm going to do two things with you, and then Jeannie's going to come up and do a couple things. We have a handout. First thing we're going to do is I want to debrief the questions. We're going to talk about the questions. I'm going to talk a little bit about Jesus and questions, and then Jeannie will come up. Do some more kind of coaching kinds of questions, because that's one of the things we do. So the first thing is around the question. So you were just asked a question and you got to ask one. I don't need to hear answers unless you're just dying to tell everybody. That's fine. But I want you to evaluate the question itself. Was it a good question? Why or why not? Could it have been a better question? Or was it not a good question? Right? You won't hurt our feelings at all. So need a little participation. If you thought it was a kind of a reasonably good question, let's see hands. And if some of you would share, why do you think it was? And we're going to start there. Okay. Jump in. Well, this side of the room. Not everyone has to share. Okay, you're there. And tell us your name, too, so we can.
I'm Doug Ashley, EPC West in Longview, Texas.
Okay. How did your soul, I'm repeating for this, how does your soul get restored? Okay, and why was that a good question, Doug?
Because I think it can go to a lot of places. It can take people a lot of places, take conversations a lot of places.
Did it have that effect today?
No, because we talked, asked it right at the end.
Because why?
Right as you started talking, we asked.
Okay, yeah, that's my fault. My bad. But it is a good question. Okay, what else? A couple of you.
Yeah, my name is Bill Wade. I'm in Central Carolina, Presbyterian. The question was, what was your hardest sickness or injury as a child?
Okay, hardest sickness or injury as a child. Okay, Bill, why do you think that was a good question?
I liked it because it's open-ended, but it also gives you the opportunity to ask follow-ups. Like, what made it hard, or what were you doing, or, you know.
Okay. Oh, good. Thank you. That's very, very insightful. Anyone else? Yeah.
Tim Anderson, Midwest. What was your favorite holiday as a kid, and how about not? Just a nice generic question.
Okay. If you didn't hear, favorite holiday as a kid and now, who did you ask? You asked Jeff. What did Jeff say, Tim?
He answered it right. I asked it wrong. But
wait.
Canada uses the word holiday to refer to vacation. I took it to mean, what was your favorite vacation? And he answered Christmas. we're Canadians too. But he thought about Christmas and got me thinking about Christmas and stuff. So it's
okay.
It changes over time.
Yeah. It just shows that huge gap between Americans and Canadians.
Right.
Once again. Anyway, thank you. One more? Yeah. Two more. What were you like in middle school? This is like my go-to favorite question. Okay, why do you think that's a good question?
Well, it's funny because as soon as I asked it, it like prompted my friend to start telling his story. Because a lot of our stories happen when we were in middle school, so I got to know a lot by just asking very simple questions. And it led to a lot of other questions that I wanted to ask.
Well, you can tell it's a good question by the response of the rest of us as soon as you, and when you ask that question, it's always a story. It's not like I was kind of shy or I was awesome. It was, this is what it was like to be me in junior high or middle school. Okay, you had one.
Fendruga, teaching elder, Church Redeemer in the south of Knoxville, Tennessee. It just read, what are you looking forward to? And I liked it because I think it can reveal a little bit about what's important to that person.
Yeah.
But it also very broad, as somebody could answer very shallow or something really, really deep. So it had a lot of different aspects.
So the question, Ben, right?
Yeah.
The question was, what are you looking forward to? And it is. It's potentially insightful. I remember one of the reasons I put that on there, I asked my wife this years ago. And I go, Sherry, what are you looking forward to? And she just paused and said, nothing. And it just hurt me. Partly because if you're Enneagram people, I'm an Enneagram 7, which means I live in the future too much. But I'm always thinking about the future. But it kind of revealed, it helped me understand something about her in that space. How many of you had a question you're going, not so good? Yes. All right. This is Bob. What was the question?
I'm from Knox in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'm a regular elder, RE.
As opposed to those irregular elders that we can't stand. IRE, yeah.
Right. What is your emotional connection to the Kansas City Chiefs?
That is my favorite question. Okay.
I mean, it's like if she had asked me that question, I would say nothing. So, I mean, it's pretty specific.
What did you say?
Well, she had a...
My two sons live in Kansas City, and they're big fans.
Okay, so she's got personal connection, and you're wearing Kansas City red. So I live out here, but grew up in Kansas, and I'm a Chiefs fan. Okay, so not a very good question for a lot of people. Happened to be okay.
Just pretty specific, that's all.
Very specific. Mm-hmm. And it could have been, do you like them? But it was like, what's your emotional connection? It's a little bit better that way, don't you think?
I like that it said, what's your emotional connection? Because that really opens it up.
Yeah.
The question that she asked me, which had the second half I thought was better, the first half was, it was a kind of a yes or no answer. Have you had a meaningful question this week? No.
Okay.
You know, I mean, or yes. But you could ask it that a different way that didn't prompt the yes or no question.
Okay. So it's the classic closed question versus open question. We're all familiar with that, right? So closed question, it leads you to a yes or no, unless you want to keep going, and that's not what. Okay, anybody else? Yes, a couple more.
I'm Susan.
Susan?
One thing you would like to change about yourself.
All right, one thing you would like to change about yourself. Did you think that was a good question or?
I feel like that was good. It was hard.
It's hard. Okay. Who did you ask?
That was my question.
Oh, that was your question. Okay. Okay. I won't ask you to fess up.
I had 8 or 9 suggestions.
Yeah.
I've known her for 5 minutes.
I know. There you go. Yeah, it wasn't, what would you like to change about her? That's a different question. Now, like, that's an interesting question. What would you like to change about yourself? Was that it? Because on one hand, it could be kind of fun. I wish I were taller or, you know, whatever. It could also be, depending on what kind of space you're in when you get that question, it could be shaming. It could be just very provocative because you're right in the middle of trying to overcome something you can't overcome. So again, the question itself is not the only factor here. Oh, and you had one too. Did you have one?
What is your superpower?
What is your superpower?
It's hard because to know exactly what that means.
Yeah, and purposefully, you know, there's some questions you go, well, what does that mean to you? So did you ask him?
Well, we asked each other.
Okay. What did Brian say was his superpower? You probably had an answer, didn't you, Brian?
You're not supposed to tell the whole group.
Yeah. This is what Pastor Sir does. We embarrass each other publicly. But.
I don't care. Okay, I don't mind. My superpower, I said, was dealing with, I like to solve problems, but I like to see people and not just the problems. So I've been a pastor and now I do operations, but I found that pastorally I do operations better because I try to do it with a pastoral side.
Okay.
Isn't superpower supposed to be one word?
Yeah. Now, the question I didn't ask is like you look at the Incredibles, right, and you go, which of those would you want to have? But we won't go there. I think those last two ones are interesting to pair together. So your question was, what would you like to change about yourself? So that's kind of in the, there's something, it's not a negative question, but it kind of provokes that. But it's hard, right? Because one, you have to come up with something. Two, is it all that? It's sometimes equally hard to be asked, well, what's your superpower? One, you're like, well, what do you mean? If you said, hey, what are you really good at? Again, in the pastoral circles, you go, well, I don't think I'm supposed to say that out loud. So it's awkward in a different way, but sometimes that's exactly the right question that you could say. And I know I've done it in coaching scenarios, saying, tell me what you're really good at. And the response is, basically, no one's ever asked me that before. Is the kind of thing. All right, I'm going to turn our attention just for a few minutes to think about Jesus and stories. I'll go back right here so I don't have to shout. And then we'll talk more practically about some great questions. All right, so I have 3 questions for you to guess. And if you know the answers, because there was a book written about this. So the questions are, how many questions in the New Testament did Jesus ask? How many questions were asked of him? And how many questions did he answer directly? Okay? So first one is, how many questions did Jesus ask? Just give me an idea of a number.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh is not a number, but we get the idea. What?
50.
100.
300.
300. Ben, did you say 300? 307. And I have a giveaway. I didn't tell you, but I'm going to give. So. Do you guys ever use the Serendipity Bible back in the 80s? Okay. It's old school. I loved it. It's did you read The Master Plan of Evangelism? Okay, that's Robert Coleman. This is his brother Lyman Coleman from Littleton, Colorado. Anyway, so the Serendipity Bible, by the way, do you have one of these, Ben? Oh, you do now. So all it is, this is the New Testament. It's nothing. There's 4,000 questions in here. It's nothing but questions about the text, and some of them are really good. Bob, would you pass that back? 307. Oh, and I'm getting this. There's a book called Jesus is the Question. That's the name of the book. By a guy named Copenhaver. He's the president of a seminary I'd never heard of, but that's what you have. All right, how many questions was Jesus asked? I will give you a hint. It's less than 307. But how many questions do you think he was asked in the Gospels?
200.
200?
110.
110?
50.
50. I don't have a giveaway. 183. They guess. Now, I've looked at different, you know, people have different ways to do this. And even how many questions he asked. Some of them are in parables and things, but that's all right. Okay, he was asked 183 questions. How many questions, and a little subjective, but how many questions did he answer directly?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, gosh. Again, not a...
30.
You know, you're saying this out loud. Okay.
30.
30.
20.
20.
10.
10. Answer is 3. Now, again, I've read under 10, something like that. Okay, that should give us pause. Jesus, I know we're talking about awakening power of questions, but he was asked 133 questions, and just a handful did he actually answer directly. And I'm not even sure which ones those are, what they're thinking. It should cause us pause, because often in the role of pastor, elder, people come to us with questions, and in fact, case in point, so this morning, I'm sitting at our little pastor served table, and Holly comes over. Holly's one of the volunteers. When I worked here, and I've been gone for 20 years, she was one of my parishioners. I was, I guess, her pastor. I was back then. I've kept in touch with her because I know her kids, and she came over, but she still treats me like a pastor, and she says, Dave, I have a non-theological question. And I thought, isn't that funny that she would introduce it that way? And I go, great. And it was, you know, just a very practical question about something. But I thought that's interesting, because that's what I guess they're expected to ask us and we're expected to answer. But Jesus didn't give direct answers very often. I'm trying not to go too long because I want to get to Jeannie. One something real quick. So I moved here in 1989 with my wife to get a biblical counseling degree with Larry Crabb and Dan Allender. You may know those names. We're in class with Larry Crabb, and there's, you know, 60 of us in class kind of crammed into this space. And during the course of his lecture, a guy raises his hands and asks a question of Larry. And Larry always played with his bottom lip. And he kind of is playing with his lip, and he goes, there's a lot of intensity behind that question. And then he just goes on lecturing. And we're all like, what? Like, you can't do that, right? You can't just not answer it and go on like nothing. And we're all, none of us got any more notes after that. And as soon as his lecture, we're going to take a break over, the guy makes a beeline to Larry. And I thought that was the most effective thing I've ever seen, of not answering a question. So anyway, I thought that was really interesting, because questions are so important. We tend to treat answering questions as pastors. We can fall into kind of the Dear Abby trap. And once in a while, we should give bits of inspirational advice about practical living. But I want to remind you, if you've ever read Eugene Peterson, God rest his soul, it was an article called The Subversive Pastor. I don't know if it turned into a book, but maybe you're familiar. But the whole idea of being subversive, and this is what he says. He says, this is what I assume as a pastor when I meet with people. The status quo is wrong. It is beyond repair and needs to be overthrown. So there you go. Very reformed of him. He also goes in with conversation saying, there is another reality. The real reality in the world exists and is here now. And the third one is, the usual means of moving people from one reality to another, the usual means are like military force or a democratic election. And he says neither of those work for this reason, for this purpose. So the means are, and he would talk about prayer and parables, but I think the encounters, Jesus' style of relating was primarily parables and questions. He asked 307 questions during the 3 short years that we have record of. And so we should be the same. And so some of the questions, of course, that Jesus asked were rhetorical. When he was the guy, they tore up the roof and they're down there and like, which is easier to say? You know, your sins are forgiven, or get up and walk. Rhetorical. I like the rhetorical one. How will you escape being condemned to hell? I think that was rhetorical. And then some were direct to people. Do you believe I'm able to do this? Do you want to be made well? All these things. And some were direct where he didn't expect a response, almost rhetorical. Do you understand what I've done to you after he washed their feet and those things? But it is his primary way to engage people. So questions, we'll come back to at least, and maybe you'll touch on this too, but as easy as it should be, we're not very good at asking questions generally. I think some individuals are highly gifted at it. I don't know where I stand in that, but it's harder than you think. It's more necessary than we realize, and it takes practice. So that's what we're going to do. So Jeannie, you come up and help us practice a little bit. Jeannie Martin, take one.
And only one.
And only one. Not like I'm that much taller than you. But
yeah, thank you. That works good. That works good. The purpose in a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. Proverbs 20, verse 5. I don't know if you've noticed this, but we really do live in a very noisy world, don't we? There are so many voices speaking into our lives. So many voices that are telling voices, telling us five ways to do this, or eight things you should stop. Or, I don't know, we probably could brainstorm a number of things in just a few seconds. And actually, maybe I'll ask you that. What are some of the voices that are speaking into your life and our lives as ministry leaders? Who are we hearing from? Your congregations have things to tell you? Yeah. Who else?
Our elders.
Your elders?
Family.
Family. Spouses?
Authors.
Authors. Right. The books we're reading?
Talk to yourself.
Your own self. Yeah.
Our broader culture.
Yeah, in what specific ways?
I'll just pick like online news sources.
Yeah, online news sources. There are more podcasts. You know, there are blogs. Yeah, exactly. Others that you think of? Some of the telling voices? Scripture? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think our enemy is pretty involved in that as well. And sometimes all these voices are speaking at once. It's as if we're surrounded by just voices, always on us, telling us things. And sometimes it can make us feel kind of lonely because we're not always feeling cared about or listened to or heard or have a place to process. And we think about that, if that is true of every one of us, that we are sitting next to, wow, what's it like? What does it mean to be an asking voice in a sea of telling voices? To maybe stop the telling voices a little bit. And asking questions not for information, not for facts and answers, even not for fixes, but for that idea of drawing another person out because we believe that God is at work in them. We believe that maybe they're not even aware of how God is at work in them. Because people need to be cared about, we need to be cared about. And we've all had this experience when we've had a chance with someone who's really listening and asks some good questions, that we actually, it helps us to hear our own thoughts and get a handle on our own understanding and even insights that we already have, and sometimes identifying, well, what's the next thing I could do? Maybe a next step. And how much more powerful when we come to that ourselves, and how much more powerful when we see other people come to that themselves, because we've given them space and time. I think one of the challenges with it for me is my discomfort with unresolved or incorrect statements or situations. And boy, do I want to get in there and set that record straight. Boy, do I want to push to resolution, almost more so that I feel like, okay, we got something accomplished. But what else might hinder us from asking questions? Yeah, we don't want to hear the answer. Maybe aren't sure we're up for that right now. Yeah.
Not the right time.
It's not the right time because of?
People around. Maybe private conversation pieces.
Yeah, people are around. It's not a good place. It's not a discreet spot. Mm-hmm.
So you lose control when you ask a question. It could go anywhere.
Yeah, you lose control when you ask a question. You don't know where it's going to go and how you might be able to handle it or bring it back. Yeah.
Because the other person doesn't know the answer.
Because you think the other person doesn't know the answer, and who does? Well, I do, of course. Yeah.
If you think you should know the answer, so you're
Yeah. Yeah, you think you should know the answer, but maybe you don't. But if you ask the question, you might get something back you don't know how to respond to. Yeah. 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 I think time. I think you kind of hinted at that. What helps us ask good questions or take the time to ask questions?
Curiosity.
Yep. Curiosity. Becoming curious. What else? Yeah. Yeah. A desire to get to know someone. Yeah.
You have to slow down and take time.
Yes, you have to slow down. That helps us. Yeah. Yeah, create space for an exchange, for sharing, yeah.
I think some of it is knowing the context in which you're in. Because there's times when there's different reasons why you ask questions to people, and so to have a sensitivity to why they're asking you or why you're asking, because I've got people, when I ask some open-ended questions in wrong situations, they get frustrated.
Yes.
It's really a yes or no question.
Yes.
Right? And then there's times when I'm in yes or no mode because I can go somewhere, and now they're frustrated, and I'm frustrated because this is really an open-ended thing. So I think having a lot of quivers in your arrow, being able to understand the room.
Yes.
Or a setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Context is huge. Thank you. Yeah. And that does help. There are environments that are more conducive.
And humility, or, I don't have to be the smartest person in the conversation right here.
Yeah. Yeah, lack of humility.
You don't ask questions.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the handout that you've been given, there was a season in my life a few years ago where I was facing a major transition, although I didn't quite know it yet. And the funny thing about transition is sometimes you have an inkling. Things start stirring in your soul. You're not always aware of it. And so I checked in with somebody who'd done a workshop with our team one time, and he's a coach. And he just started out with four questions, and I've added one of them you have on the list. And I think I found that I really clung to those. I wasn't totally sure how to respond to any of them, but actually one of them kind of resonated more and rose to the top and became sort of like that next step on the path, kind of that clue that I didn't know how to pay attention to. And so I use these questions a lot, and I love just having them in my back pocket, because if I don't know what to ask, because sometimes you're like, I know I need to ask a question here, I don't know what to ask. Sometimes this really helps. Where are you thriving? This is a good question to ask ministry leaders, because ministry leaders are, as one person said to me once, pathologically disappointed. Aren't we? And to take time to say, well, where are you thriving? Where are you sensing God's pleasure? What's working well? What are you celebrating right now? And sometimes that can help bring clarity to other areas that are more painful. The next one is, where are you struggling? What's not working well? What's a challenge for you? What's a pain point right now? What's confusing? What seems ambiguous or overwhelming to you? What's missing? What's missing in your heart? Like a sense of energy or anticipation, looking forward to something, fulfillment? Is that missing? Are there resources that are missing? What's missing? And then, because each person is like an 8,000-piece puzzle, and for any one question you ask, you might get a half a dozen pieces in your hand. And it's really easy from those half a dozen pieces, the little bit that you're given, and especially for me as an intuitive, I think I can intuit what's happening. And sometimes I can and be right, but that actually inhibits me from asking more questions. It moves me into advice or trying to be all wise and stuff. But when I remember I only have a handful of pieces, there's always more to the story than I can even conceive. And so a really good question is, and what else? Tell me more about that. You use this term. Could you unpack that a little bit? What do you mean when you say that? And what else? Awe. And what else? And a piggyback question on that would be, and how are you feeling about that? We move into the heart. A good question depends on good listening, which depends on good questions. And we ask questions to love. We ask questions to listen better. We ask questions to learn about our others and ourselves, to be lovers of and learners from those we're coming alongside. And I think about Jesus on the road to Emmaus, with these disheartened, confused, discouraged, absolutely devastated disciples. And he approaches them with questions. What is this conversation that you're having amongst yourselves? And he listens. And they say, well, haven't you heard, you know, all the things that are happening in Jerusalem? And then he says, what things? Again, he's not looking for information. He obviously knows. But there are some things that were so important that they be able to put into their own words and express themselves. And part of that dialogue, as they're recounting the history, are three words three or four words that really jumped out at me recently. And we had hoped that he was the one. We had hoped that. And it was there he got to meet them. Because he said, what things? What disappointment? What is this about? I think, wow, God, you go that slow with me because you care and want me to unpack that with you through other people sometimes. I'll just take another minute here. The rest of your sheet there. Active listening is really important. And one aspect of active listening is reflective listening. We need help to slow down. We need help to not quick jump to how I'm going to answer, or this piece of advice, or this podcast I'm going to send you. We need help to slow down. And I have found that thinking about, as I'm seeking to pay attention to a person, I'd like to be able to say back, I notice tears when you talked about your daughter. Or I appreciate your heart, your endurance, and your desire to trust God's timing. Or I wonder what else might be happening. Sometimes you might make an observation, and we can be afraid of if we make an observation that isn't right, that we didn't get it quite right. But I would just like to emphasize here that an inaccurate observation can be as powerful in a conversation as when you're spot on. Sometimes when you're spot on, there's that feeling of resonance with a person. But if you don't get it quite right, that's okay, because it helps them go further in unpacking and identifying for themselves as well as for you. So you don't have to be afraid of that. And I say that because I was always afraid of that, would just kind of beat myself up over it after a while. I think that God sees us, hears us, knows us, loves us. And when we give people the gift of that you are seen, you are heard, you are known, you are loved by God through me right now, or through each other, you are cared about, you are valuable, and the biggest thing that helps us all unpack things with other people is that you are safe. You are safe to explore your own heart and explore who Jesus is.
You did that in one take. That was amazing.
I cheat. I have notes. You don't.
I'm going to finish up our sheet, and then I hope you'll stay a little bit longer, and let's just have a conversation. I think you guys have so much, there's a wealth of wisdom in the room around this, so we'll have a conversation about either for Jeannie or me, or just for each other, or things you would like to add. So I wanted to talk about that last one, this is the TED Talk I'll Never Give. So when I worked here, I was a singles pastor for most of it, and this isn't really about the singles community, but that's my first pastoral gig. And so I would meet with them a lot. This is what I did, you know, my pastoral time. I would go out, we'd have coffee, and one of the things that happens, I think, as a mentor, ministry leader, pastor, whatever, is that when you're getting to know someone, if they're asking questions of you, it's kind of like my friend Holly this morning. Often they're, what does the Bible mean? What did Jesus mean? I mean, those kinds of questions. But when I'd get together for singles, I'd just say, hey, let's go get to know each other. I'd ask a lot of questions, getting to know them. I'd come home at the end of the day, and my wife and I would connect, and we'd talk about our days. And it got to a point where she'd say, hey, and I'd say, hey, I met with four different singles, and we went out, or four different of my people. Did anyone ask you a question today, Dave? And I remember I don't remember exactly the first time, but she would ask that, and I would go, no. No one asked me a question. And it got to be the thing that she would ask me when we would connect, or I would ask her if she was about her business. Anybody ask you a question? And I remember once I go, no, you know, no one asked me a damn question today. And so I took that and I decided, oh, that's a great TED Talk. And I like that. So I forced an acrostic that I'm going to give to you. So again, this is the first time you're ever, and maybe you'll hear it on TED Talk and you're like, I remember when Dave did this. Probably not. So I just want to talk about, but I was thinking about what makes a good question. And again, I think the most important thing, and maybe you'd agree, that is a commitment to asking good questions is the most important thing. But here's some nuances that I thought were important that fit into my acrostic. The first thing is, I think a good question is daring. A willingness to risk. If it's a good question, some of the ones that were out there thinking about your question about what would you like to change? I mean, it's a little bit of a daring question, but in the right circumstances, that works really well. And as you go about your work and your relationships, are you willing to ask a daring question? And I'm not saying a jump off the cliff thing, but take a little bit of a risk. And I think if we go through our days and our weeks without taking any risk with our question asking to ourselves as well as others, I gotta imagine that there's some things spiritually that aren't happening that God would like to see happening. I always think of taking a risk. You think of the classic, like, pickup lines, right? So with like the classic, like, oh, excuse me, are you a model? Again, that horrible. So, you know, that those, and I've been married a long time. I can't imagine that works ever. My favorite one comes from the comedian Stephen Wright. His pickup line is, do you live around here often? Which would cause you to think for a little bit. When I do weddings, I implement a hand fasting ritual. It's a Celtic ritual that my niece, when she got married, asked me to do it, married an Irish guy, said, hey, we want to do a Celtic hand fast. I'm like, great, I'll do it. What is that? And so now I'm sold, and you ought to look this up. So the Celtic hand fasting, at least the one I use, is a series of six questions that you ask before you take the vows. And you know what it's like in a wedding. I did one a few months ago. And typically, what are the questions? Are you going to love them forever? Are you going to just be crazy about each other until eternity? You know, and it's just like that. And you go, yes, I will. And that's highly appropriate. However, that's not really marriage. So the Celtic hand fasting has six questions. You ask to both the same question. And the first question is, where's my first question? Oh, will you cause her pain? That's the first question. And the answer is, it's really yes, but the answer is I may. And then you follow it up, is that your intent? No. Will you cause him pain? Is that your intent? No. And then there's a kind of a, will you seek to each other's pain? And the answer, yes. And then there's one about honor and laughter. And then there's like, will you anger her? I may. Will you burden him? I may. So I like using these. It's just this reminder, one for marriage, but it's interesting when I do weddings, you can kind of check out at weddings because they kind of follow a pattern. People perk up when you do you do this hand fasting thing around and you tie, it's where tying the knot comes from. It's really cool. If you want to know more, I've got a document I'll send to you. Okay, but take a risk. We have to do it, and you know what I mean. And I think I chicken out far too often. A good question is artful. Emily Dickinson said this great line, you probably heard it, tell the truth, but tell it, anybody know? Slant. Tell the truth, but tell it slant. It's like that's the way truth gets to us. It's not often needs to be direct. It has to kind of come around. So ask a question, ask it slant. So I like the idea of asking a question that's a little bit off just to be, not to just be creative, but to be artful about it. A good question is artful. So I do this all the time. My wife rolls her eyes, but I'm fine with that. We'll be in the grocery store and there would be someone there that worked for the store. And I would say, if you were tomato paste, where would you be? I do this all the time. And sometimes they look at me like, what's wrong with you? And sometimes they giggle and then they go, it's aisle 7. But I use that line all the time. I never get tired of it. But again, it's just, and it doesn't really change, the universe doesn't change because of it. But I want to practice asking kind of artful questions. And this came to me on this property. So my three kids, but when my two girls were in school here, in grade school, I'd go right behind us. This is where you drop off and pick up. So I pick them up often, certain my days. And what's the question you ask as a dad? You pick up your kids. How was your day? And what do they say?
Great.
Good. Great. Fine. So, and this happened every day. How was your day? Yeah, it was good. It was great. Oh, it was fine. Okay, and I got tired of it. And I said, okay, tomorrow when I pick you up, I'm going to ask this question, and you cannot say good, great, or fine. Do you got it? And they're like, yeah, Dad, what are you, settle down. And so I picked him up. We get in the car, kind of wait for a moment. And then I said, girls, how was your day? Like reminding him, silence. And then my oldest said, marvelous, stupendous, tremendous. And I go, it was fine. She goes, yeah, it's fine. And I go, okay, the problem is not them. The problem is me. It's a bad question. You just can't do good with that question. So then I started being creative. So I pick them up and I go, when did you raise your hand in class today? And they think and they go, oh, I did that. Or who did you sit next to when you ate lunch? Again, doesn't change the world, but again, it helps me practice, and it's a good do it with kids. In fact, kids tend to be really good at question asking. I did read a study done. There's actually a study called the Right Question Institute. Who knew? And they did a study about like how many questions a four-year-old asks during a day. It's like 100. How many questions does a teenager ask in a typical day? Maybe a couple. What's for dinner? Yeah, I mean, but you go, okay, from 4 to 14, like what happens? I mean, it's kind of funny and it's incredibly sad as well. So we have to relearn how to ask questions, but being artful about it. I was at a reunion for the group I led here, my young singles group. We've all kind of grown up together. I'm like 7-8 years older than them, but still kind of a pastor. But anyway, they had a reunion and we all went. I'd see people I hadn't seen for 20 years. And I don't know why, I was just talking to this guy I hadn't seen in probably 20 years. And my question was, do you like your life? And it caused him to stop and he said, no, like that. And I said, my version of, and what else? I said, well, tell me about that. And we talked about it. And I thought, well, that's a pretty good question. I came up, just tell it slant. Okay, artful. M, magnanimous. I had to work hard for an M word. That's what I came up with, but I love this word. It means to be generous of spirit. So good question asking is just being generous. And for me anyway, because I'm a talker, I know that's hard to imagine, but I am. And so I need to make space to ask questions and shut up. And I don't do that very well. And so that's part of it, is to be magnanimous. There's a lot more studies these days, of course, on narcissistic pastors. And narcissists don't ask questions. Or they ask questions because they have a very specific agenda. And because a narcissist clinically struggles with empathy. They really can't put themselves in their shoes. There's shoes they should be asking questions, and they don't do that very well. So to be magnanimous, it's just to be generous. And I think as church leaders, sometimes, like my early experience, I just have to say, okay, today I'm going to ask good questions. I'm going to try to draw out deep waters when it's appropriate. I'm going to try to be artful. I'll be risky if I need to, daring. And they may not ask me a question, and I'll maybe be disappointed, but I will live with that. And so that's being magnanimous. One of the things I do, by the way, for Lent most years, I should do it all year round, is that I will, every day, I will not say something I want to say. Okay? Now, for some of you, you're like, well, that's stupid or whatever. I'd go, for me, that's huge. So literally it happens during Lent because I focus on it. Then I'm in a conversation with Bob and he says something. I'm like, ooh, I got something to, yeah, it's triggering in me because that's what I do. And I just sit on it so that I can listen to Bob. Anyway, you figure out your own, what does it help? What helps you be magnanimous and be generous? I mean, think of the, don't let, what's the proverb? I wrote it down. Oh, let someone else praise you and not your own mouth. Jesus' whole parable about people jostling for the right position, it says you're gonna shame yourself. Let someone else bring you up there. That's hard for me. But that's being magnanimous. And then lastly is just being natural. I think on one hand, being natural means be yourself. I think perhaps the most important part of question asking is what Jeannie was talking about, is about being curious. And you've heard that rule about your 10,000 hours to get good at something. I think this is my life task. I need 10,000 hours to be better at asking questions, and being committed to that will be key. So that's all we have. What time does the thing start? We probably have to... 1 o'clock? Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought it was 1:30. You guys were patient beyond belief. But, you know, I'm an EPC guy. It's just a business meeting. I'm kidding. I recorded that. Doggone it. That was it. Anyway, thank you all.